search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Welcome, BBCers, to episode number 195 of the Broken by Concept podcast, the number one solo queue educational and motivational podcast. Curtis, today's episode, we're going to be exploring champion pools and the term concept that we've coined, champ pool cycling.
That's correct.
I get a lot of questions about, more in depth about the champ pool cycling. We've briefly touched on champ pool stuff on our ranked guide that we do each year. This is going to be the episode that we should be able to point to. This is the explanation to some questions. And I gathered some questions for champ pool cycling from my community, which will, that will be the sort of the second part. So we'll have two parts talking about champ pools in general, the different types of champions, the archetypes we have here, evergreen champions, weird champs in the game, size of pool, all those normal questions people ask. What does it mean to have a champion pool, balanced champion pool, being a one trick, all that sort of stuff in league. And then, yeah, then we'll do the champ pool cycling specifically after.
Yeah, it's a bit of a complicated one. You know, I had this idea of tackling this topic in a bit of a different way, right? And what I wanted to do is kind of get aligned with, you know, get us aligned, but also get the viewers aligned with the way we view champions within the game itself before we even talk about pools. Because I feel like when we talk about champ pools as a concept alone, there's a lot of invisible kind of under the surface information that we're actually contemplating, but we're not actually broadcasting to the world. So what I want to start with is the term kind of evergreen solo queue champion. So what we're going to do first to at a high level is go through kind of like, I guess, all that information that I think I'm thinking about when I get asked champ pool questions. Okay. So the first kind of at a high level, you know, I think of there are champions in the game that are in their each respective role, depending on rank, always good in solo queue. Right. So what we've done is we've gone ahead and maybe listed a few champions for both high elo, so master plus, low elo, below plat, that in solo queue are just generally good in the solo queue environment. Maybe they're good at adapting to chaos. They can feel impactful. You can carry games, whatever. They tend to always be somewhat in the conversation. Now, obviously, you know, meta is a thing. So, you know, you can't be truly accurate, but more often than not, over the years, trends start to appear. So for mid, you know, the way I said is that you've got champs in low elo that I think fundamentally their kit is always going to be good regardless of meta. It's like Veigar, Brand, and Lux. Like, I think, you know, if you just cut all the fat, regardless, if you're in silver, gold, whatever, these champions are just going to be good. You're going to get value. They're going to do well. You're going to have success. Regardless of the meta, they're going to have a place because their kits fundamentally just gel well with, you know, the ARAMs. They gel well with the ease of execution, the way people don't really understand your range and threat and CC. That's just too much there in the kits that I just think they thrive. Now, for high elo, you got champions like, I personally think Zoe is one of those champions that you just always see around. Now, it's not a champ that every player plays in the sense that it's super common in a champ pool. But what I will say about Zoe specifically in high elo is that it's always around because it adapts very well to chaotic environments. It gets a lot of priority. It's great in 2v2s. And it basically, just the kit fundamentally just wins most mage matchups. It just is a very good, I found over the years, like there's always like a high challenger Zoe player. Like in Korea, there's always a high challenger player in like NA or EU with this champion. So I found over the years looking back, wow, Zoe's always there. So I think Zoe's a great high elo champion. I think...
Yeah, well, again, going to the Zoe, it's just so interesting to me that you put that in, or that was your first thought when we sort of were talking about this. And yeah. I have probably seen one Zoe in 12 months.
Zoe's one of those champions where you got to put in a lot of effort. It's kind of like, I would say the new version of Zoe is Nico. It's the same, it's in the same vein, in the same conversation where it's a lot of prio, strong 2v2 threat, you know, gets a lot of pressure, great early damage, spikes relatively early into the game. And, you know, I would say, so you see more Nico nowadays than you do Zoe. I see a lot of Nico. Nico was actually like the highest win rate champion in solo queue in EU for Master Plus for ages.
Wow.
It was the high elo pick. Obviously, got altered around a little bit and things, the meta shifted a bit. But I think Nico will be probably that new champion. But again, given the Nico rework, it's still kind of relatively new. Zoe was the one that really jumped out to me as if you want to play Zoe at a high, want a champ that's going to be consistent at a high elo, Zoe is one of them.
And Zoe barely gets touched in patches.
Yes.
Like, I can't remember the last.
It has a very clear identity. That's what I like about Zoe. It has a clear identity. No one's playing Zoe for scaling, right? You're picking it for that early game, skirmish prior 2v2 threat, right? And then you've got a few other champs here. I listed like Ahri and Talia. I think Ahri and Talia, just for high elo, again, just really good, versatile kits, can adapt to chaos. They've got, and they scale with game understanding, especially Talia. Talia's a champion that, the way I describe, is that if you're very good at the game of League of Legends, you can nearly always make it work. Now, yes, you're going to have some miserable matchups and stuff, but I think for high elo, Ahri and Talia are champions that, again, over the course of years, are going to be constantly in the conversation because of their unique, they can adapt to chaos. They've got great, decent mobility. They can create mana fending fights. They've got go buttons. They've got really reliable skirmishing. Just really reliable skirmishing in general, I think, is an important part of that equation.
They're evergreen.
Evergreen. These are what I call evergreen champions for both low elo and high elo. Now, you've listed a few for jungle. You want to walk through those?
Yep. So for jungle, evergreen solo queue champions, what I've noticed, my many years as a jungle coach, below platinum, Evelynn, Nocturne, Zac, Kayn. Now, Evelynn, Kayn, more on sort of the archetype of more carry style junglers. I mean, Evelynn's just the bread and butter jungler, right? Great champion for carry games. You know, ganks, you have stealth, assassin, you have damage to kill people. Kayn, I'm talking more about blue Kayn specifically here. And then Nocturne and Zac, like Nocturne has his go button, right? His R ability, darkness, and then Zac is just a great tank that does damage and also has engage, has good ganks once he gets enough points in his E.
I feel like laners are terrible at dealing with all these champions.
Yes, yeah, that's actually the big one.
That's the big one.
These champs all can gank and get kills very, very, they're guaranteed to get
kills. Everyone loses their mind in low elo with those champions, specifically Evelynn as well. Everyone hates, even me, I hate versing Evelynn because the way, I get asked this question at least once a week, once a fortnight. They say, Curtis, what do I do against Evelynn? You know what I say? Then, not really much. It's the jungler's responsibility.
Yeah.
It's your jungler's responsibility to deal with Evelynn. You can maybe get a deep ward here or there, but ultimately, it's not going to mean much. Like in the mid game, especially, you're screwed. If Evelynn wants to kill you in a side lane, you're going to die. So I said the counterplay is grouping as much as you can on neutral objectives, group, and then try and deep ward. But really, if you don't want to shut down Evelynn, it's your jungler's responsibility to do that, not yours. That's what I always say.
People might be asking, why is Shaco not on this list? We have a different category that we've put a champ like Shaco in, which we'll explore in this
come
section.
Back to that.
And then evergreen solo queue champs for jungle, high elo. Belveth, sort of new to the game, but has really sort of taken over high elo. I think that just the way the kit works, it's just going to be around for a long time. Mm. Especially with Raptors, how important Raptors became in the last month or so. Sorry, last year
jungle,
or so.
Thinking about it, by the way, jungle's a little bit harder to also talk about because the roles changed a lot.
It does.
Like, think about how often the actual jungle role, like the way the camps work and XP, it's like, it's always changing, like Belveth, like right now, obviously Belveth, with way how important Raptors are, right? Belveth thrives with that. But then that wasn't always the case, right? Like, was it? Like,
no, it was, I always think about that time period of season 10, was it, when you had that
Krugs
rumble
really
that was just like the speed of your full clear was what dictated basically the meta, and that was when Rumble, Morgana and Olaf were
Olaf,
in the competitive
Olaf.
Like dominating the meta, like Rumble, Morgana, like that's actually never happened in mid. Like there hasn't been that switch, like suddenly Riot changed some numbers on clear speed and then bam, these champions all suddenly jungles in meta in the pro play. Remember that MSI that was literally just Rumble, Morgana,
you know,
and then Olaf, and then these champs have disappeared off the face of the earth from a jungle perspective. So jungle's a tricky one. The whole champ pool stuff, we'll talk more about this as we go on, but Jungle is a very hard to define role because everything can basically get played in it.
And Riot themselves have also kind of, I think, been on the fence about
what jungle to be. Yeah,
which is interesting. But yeah, I do think Belveth.
Belveth is high elo staple evergreen jungle from our perspective right now, and the other one is Kindred. You're always going to see it. It definitely does struggle. It's sort of an item, sort of base thing, sort of how AD items are like in the meta at the moment. But Kindred, I feel like, is always a champion.
He's in and out for the past few years. Yeah. I swear, there's always high elo Kindred players. Like since probably 2017, even really, right? I think every year Kindred has kind of been in high elo, pretty reliably, actually.
You might be saying champs like Lee Sin, like RH to Lee Sin and stuff on this list. I mean, Lee Sin just really sort of struggles in solo queue.
It comes in and out. It definitely comes in and out.
Way less, though, than a champ like Kindred's, I think, for more sure. around.
Yep. I would agree with that.
All right, so...
That's like one category of evergreen solo queue champions. So that's a kind of a subcategory. Again, we're going through a lot of subcategories here. And don't worry, at the end, we're going to tie all this together. At the start, it's going to be a little bit complicated. So I want to move into now evergreen role champions. Now... What I mean by this, like role champions, these are champions that, you know, when you think of the role, you think of top, you think of jungle, you think of mid, you think of like an archetype of a champion that really kind of encapsulates what the role is all about and teaches the fundamentals of that role nearly perfectly. You can learn every aspect of that role through that champion. Now, these are champions that are typically quite complicated. They're quite hard to execute. You've got to have, as you were saying before, really good fundamentals to make them work. And you've got to be very detail-oriented. But the good thing about these champions that we're going to be talking about is that they're always going to have a place in that role. They're always going to be in that role. And if you want to learn the game in a very holistic manner that encapsulates the role, these are great for that. Now, that's not for everyone. And I don't even recommend this a lot of the time, but I think it's important to note. So you want to go ahead and start this one, Nathan?
Yep. So what we've got here for our evergreen role champions, always can play regardless of meta, is going to be in top lane, Renekton and Aatrox.
And I think the main one there is Renekton.
Renekton.
Like when you think of Renekton is the top laner. Like he does everything you need. He can be strong in the side. He's got great skirmishing and, you know, team fighting. He can get prio. He has flexibility with builds. He's got C utility. He's got everything. He is the definition of a tried and true top laner, and he's been around since. Think about how long Renekton has been a staple pick for top. Since as long as we can remember in competitive play, he is the top laner.
Yep. Always been around. I remember playing back when I was a pro player back in...
This is like season three or four.
I remember Renekton was vividly. A nightmare. So it was Renekton Shyvana, I remember, was back in the day there. Yeah. Renekton was just, yeah.
Think about that. Think about how that's over 10 years ago.
Yeah, with all the new champions.
10 years with all the new champs. It's still basically the same identity.
Yep.
Think about that.
The ultimate top laner.
It's the ultimate top laner.
And obviously Aatrox being a bit of a new champ, but you just think of Aatrox, you think of top
still, lane. Still, long time, long time as well.
Well, Aatrox, since the rework, I guess, more so, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Mid lane, you can obviously talk on this, Curtis. Orianna and Viktor, you've said these are evergreen for mid.
Yeah, I think Orianna, the big one as well, specifically. Like, Orianna is a champion that it is just the mid laner in the sense that, look, mid lane is a very multifaceted role. We'll get to this, how there's assassins as well. We'll cover the assassins in a moment. But when I think of, like, mid, you know, at least... encapsulating the entirety of the skill set, whether it's like, you know, really working on your fundamentals of wave management, your resets, getting control of the lane, controlling zones, you know, having a decent amount of scaling, being able to having to work on your warding and leaning. Like Orianna is that champ that you can learn basically every aspect of the kit. The only thing that you don't really learn with Orianna is roaming. But again, if I'm trying to encapsulate the role of mid, Orianna's always in the conversation. Think about it again. Orianna has been around, you know, for as long as I can remember.
Orianna, Renekton, I'll put in the same category. Orianna mid. You know, Toys back in season two won Worlds with Orianna mid, and then Faker won with Orianna mid last year, right?
Exactly. It's literally the tried and true mid lane mage, and it teaches you a lot about the game. Now, Orianna's actually a pretty complicated champion. I do have it in my MLS, but I put it 10 out of 10 difficulty. And I don't recommend, like, it's one of those champs that if you're up for the challenge, go for it. And it will always be around, and it's always viable, but in varying degrees. And it's, so you got to really be willing to get into the details to make that jam work.
So leading on to now my jungle list here, I had Kindred, Graves, Nidalee, Lee Sin. These are what people think about jungle, evergreen. You could pretty much always going to be playing them pretty much regardless of Elo. And again, for learning the role. But as we sort of seen here with the conversation with Orianna, 10 out of 10 difficulty and Renekton, the reason these champs we've found is that they can always play regardless of meta is sort of because of the difficulty of these champs.
Yeah.
You know, like...
They tick a lot of boxes.
They tick a lot of boxes, but they're difficult. They're really
even
hard.
Even Renekton is hard.
Super hard.
Renekton's a hard champ.
Yeah. To win, to kill the Nexus.
It's a hard champion.
To kill the Nexus with is important to note, which is really interesting. I think that was an interesting where it just so happens that the hardest champs in the role in the game happen to be the
some
evergreen.
Of them. They're not the hardest, but they're up there with one of the hardest. These archetypal type, you know, role oriented champions that really define the role are, and when I think of jungle, I said to you, Nathan, Lee Sin. When I think of jungle, I think of Lee Sin.
Lee Sin's just such a tricky one, eh? Because so Lee Sin just gets... You know why Lee Sin's just a real tricky one for being in the conversation of evergreen? Is because he gets beaten and punched by patch notes. He gets obliterated constantly over the years.
But the one thing I will say about Lee Sin, right? He's a pretty tried and true champion. You think of Lee Sin. Again, wasn't Lee Sin played in like...
Yeah, Bengi.
Back in the day, old school. Like, that's like the... You know, I think of across metas, Lee Sin has always been in the conversation.
I mean, technically, now that I think about it, more Jarvan more so.
Well, I said Jarvan. You said no to Owen. I said Jarvan. Why did you initially...
I think Jarvan's a better version of Lee Sin.
That's what I thought. My intuition from an outside perspective is Lee Sin and Jarvan.
I'll be happy to replace that with Jarvan now. I mean, again, I think about Jarvan in Season 2, Fnatic
always
skin.
Been around.
You know, the Jarvan Season 4 Samsung.
And when I think of like the proper jungler, I think of, what's his name? The Ambition.
Ambition, that's
playing
right.
Playing Jarvan.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I just think of that's what I think of. That's jungling
jungle,
to me.
Yeah. Again, Jarvan gets beaten and punched.
These are hard, and they're not always viable in the sense of they are always viable, but they're not always strong.
Yes.
They will go through periods where they're weak as hell, and they'll go through periods where they're strong, but most of the time they're just sitting at that like below average, just complicated champions. Like when I think of Jarvan, like again, he can do a lot. He can gank, he can create utility, he can be tanky.
You'll notice between Kindred, Graves, Nidalee, Lee Sin / Jarvan, I guess now, they're all hypermobile. You have to be able to jump over walls as
terrain
a jungler.
Terrain scaling is super important.
Yeah, terrain scaling is the word. Yeah.
That's why Rengar was always so shit and so average and never was an in and out pick, right? Because it never had that terrain scaling. That's why it was so fundamentally capped.
As a jungler,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, then ADC and support. For ADC, we've said Jinx and Kai'Sa.
I think, again, the big one, though, Jinx.
I think
Jinx specifically encapsulates what AD carry is all about.
These two champs are the champs I've seen pentakills the most in my solo queue career forever.
Yeah.
These are the pentakill type champs because of the reset mechanic. You could, of Jinx and Kai'Sa is just like, you know, go in, she can get a lot of kills, do a lot of damage.
But I think of Jinx, the reason I said Jinx is that I think Jinx encapsulates what AD carry is about. You need to have good positioning. You need to be farmed. You spike, you know, you scale like crazy. You're a genuine hyper carry. You've got self-peel mechanics relatively inbuilt inside your kit. And you have an incredibly high skill cap. You know, that's it. That is the champion. Like you've got, obviously there are other champions that do this. But again, I think Jinx is really like, when I think of like, peak double lift or like, you know, Uzi, and like, you think of like the like, obviously Vayne is probably in the conversation, obviously, and things like that, but in terms of consistency, that hat tick every box, it's really that Jinx.
Because then you think about champs like Vayne and Caitlyn. Vayne, terrible lane phase. Caitlyn, only lane phase. Jinx, both.
Yeah, and Caitlyn is specifically one of those champs that gets destroyed by metas and patches.
That's
she can be really good or really shit.
Yeah.
I agree.
And support. Support's a bit interesting. We need to sort of categorize it into sort of...
It's kind of separated, right? You've got enchanters and then like engage.
Engage.
And it's obviously more complicated than that. But again, thinking about the role big picture, you kind of got enchanters like Janna and Lulu. And then you've got like the engages like Leona, Thresh. And I was going to say Nautilus, but Nathan, you thought Thresh?
I think Nautilus hasn't been around for as long as Thresh has.
Okay.
But again, Thresh, insanely hard.
You think, of like Marta back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, I think Thresh is probably... I would actually put Thresh up there as like the hardest champ in League of Legends. Would you agree?
Very, very complicated.
I think it's
champion.
The hardest to win games with Kill the Nexus.
I think Janna is really incredibly complicated. Like in terms of
skill cap of Janna.
Skill cap
insane.
Of Janna is insane.
It is, yeah.
Absolutely insane. Like... I mean, with all these champs, right? With Lulu as well and Leona and Thresh. But like, yeah, Thresh and I think Thresh and Janna, like that's insane skill cap right there.
And they're evergreen support.
Evergreen support. You're going to see them always in some way, shape or form.
They're always impactful.
And they encapsulate what the role is about, right? Fundamentally. Okay. So there's that. So we've got these. So we've gone through two categories. We're going to move on now to champions that really teach the subcategories within each role, right? So now we're getting into subcategories. So within mid, right, you've got mages, you've kind of got assassins. Now there's more nuance than that. You've got, I guess, roamers and bruisers and crap, but like just really simply, mid lane is fundamentally about mages and assassins,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So for mages, like I think like you've got the champs, you've got those you got like Syndra. It's like a champion that when I think about that role, like, I guess Orianna as well. Like, Syndra, Victus, Orianna. They teach mages. Like, if you want to play any mage. If you play Syndra, let's just take Syndra. You could play any mage. You could play Zilean. You could play Xerath. You could play TF. You could play Talia. You could play any mage if you can play Syndra well. It teaches you the whole shebang, right? Now, conversely, with assassins, you've got... I put, like, Akali and Zed. Like, if you could play Akali, you can basically play every... You could servicely... learn every other assassin. You can play Zed. You could probably serviceably learn nearly every other assassin. Now, I think Akali was the first one that came to my mind. I think Akali is one of those tried and true assassins that is always good. It's always around. It's got a great kit. It's fundamentally always in the picture. And again, it forces you to learn every aspect of what it means to be an assassin. Fog of War... staggered and really intentional abilities. You can't afford to waste your abilities. Like if you waste your shroud, you waste your E, you're screwed. You know, you're not very forgiving, right? And I think that's what an assassin should be about. Like you're not very forgiving. And Zed is like that, but I think Akali again truly encapsulates that. So I've got Akali and Syndra as the two kind of archetypes within those that really like encapsulate those two subcategories.
So, the archetypes for jungle, this is where it gets really messy and ugly. You know, I would love if I could say what you just said there, where you learn this champion in jungle, it'll teach you everything you need to know about playing that type of champion, right. That role. Like, it's purely like, you're playing, even if it comes down to mages, you're playing Brand, you need to learn how to play Brand.
Right.
If you're playing Talia jungle, again... Like, yeah, you position is that sometimes overlaps and stuff, but you need to learn how to play that champion. I'd love to say that, but I can't. Like, jungle, literally every archetype is played in the jungle. Let's go through them right here. Mages in the jungle that we can see. Brand, Talia, Karthus. There's others, but there's the mage archetype that works in the jungle. Then you have the standard Bruiser, Xin Zhao, Jarvan, Lee Sin, Bruiser, AD, champions. They can kill things, but they're also a bit tanky as well. Then you got tanks. Sejuani, Maokai, Zac, Rammus. You can play tanks in the jungle. You can play 80, like technically 80 carry champions, sort of, like Kindred and Graves. That's another archetype. You have really true support picks, like Rell and Ivan. That's another whole category as well.
So they're not really tanks.
But they're pure, like hardcore support. Yeah, utility, hardcore utility. And then I have another category.
Yeah.
Like melee AP bruisers, like Gwen and Lilia. They're sort of, is there any others there? I guess, yeah.
Okay.
And then you've also got another one. There is assassins, right? Eve, Talon, Kha'Zix, Kayn. So that's basically, that's every archetype in League, isn't it?
So it's like jungle, can you do anything?
Any archetype you want. Yeah. So again,
it's the combination of like mid and support and top.
Top way less. Reason being is that top laners have no mobility.
Right.
Urgot, Aatrox, Darius.
True. Renekton.
Garen. You can't play these in the snow. So it's actually...
But you can play tanks from top, though.
Yeah, the tanks from top.
Kind of.
Okay, well, let's go through some tanks. Ornn, Slayer, not really.
No, not really. You can only really
play... The tank jungle champs are sort of their own beast.
So it's kind of like... But what I'm saying is that, like, at a high level, you've kind of got bruises.
Mm.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm talking, like, at a high level. You got bruises, like the Xin Zhao and stuff. It's kind of like the bruiser-ish thing from top. You got tanks, which is kind of from top. You've got utility kind of from support. You got carry-oriented assassins and mages from mid. You know what I mean? Like, you've kind of got, like, a bit of spice, you know, from every role.
You do, yeah. Dipped into jungle. Yeah, that's right, yeah. But I would say top the least.
Top the least.
And AD carry, actually.
Even Graves and Kindred, right?
Yeah, but again...
The least.
It's interesting because those champs are just specifically designed more so for jungle in a way. Mm. Like, they just work like that. Right. Like, I wouldn't really call Graves and Kindred like hardcore AD carries. No, no. Right?
They're quite unique.
Yeah. So, yeah. Jungle's a
bit of a mess. Yeah.
Every archetype, even it's created its own sort of archetypes in a way. You know, certain champions are just sort of best played in the jungle role.
You know, the more we've done this podcast, the more we've realized how weird jungle is.
Yes.
It's a bloody weird role.
Yeah. It's like a lot of the time when we have topics, I need to reframe the topic from a jungle's perspective.
Yeah.
Laning and jungling, it's a different game. It really is.
Yeah.
You're playing a different game.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then, you know, before we tie all this together, then we've kind of got these weird champions. Now, these are kind of champions that they exist in every role, maybe more some in other roles than others. But like, these are champions that just don't really kind of fit in a category. Like, you could maybe make a very, very minor subcategory for them, but they kind of are just very unique kits. And the way I've always thought of these champions, like, these are like Dota champions. They don't, to me, they don't feel like League of Legends oriented kits. Like, for mid, you've got Katarina, Fizz. Okay, let's just go one by one. Katarina, it's a very unique kit.
No resources, full melee.
Basically full melee. I mean, you got your Q, which is range, yeah. Your dagger, but it's a very weird, weird kit. It is an assassin, but it's unlike Akali or Zed or Talon. It's like super, super strange. Like, it's kind of like Yasuo, you know? It's like this very... Like, think about Yasuo as a champion. It's this... You're like a melee champion, full melee that builds full crit a lot of the time. I mean, not always. You'll be a bork or whatever, but like, it's your full glass cannon.
Kind of melee champion.
Melee champion. Yeah, that has...
You're like an AD character.
That is tied... Your mobility is tied to minions. It's just so weird. Like, the way it plays, it doesn't feel like you're playing League of Legends when you play Yasuo. You're playing Yasuo. You're not playing anything. You're playing fucking Yasuo. Same for Fizz. You're just playing Fizz. It's same for... And then you've got these weird ones like Heimerdinger. You know, Heimerdinger. What is Heimerdinger?
No champ in the game places down, like, turrets.
Like Cho'Gath, full AP Cho'Gath, and Graves mid, and Pyke mid, and Rumble mid. You've got these champions that they're like their own category of kind of champion. And now, I'm not to say you can't learn the game through these champions, but you do learn a very unique skill set that doesn't always necessarily apply to other champions that you want to learn. So that's why this is a contrast to like the archetypal kind of champions, where like it's the complete opposite of a Syndra, or it's the complete opposite of an Akali, where like the skill set of those champions, you know, teach you a lot about the game. And you've got to fight Fury for jungle as well.
Yeah, jungle. I mean, look at this again. Definitely champs like Ivan, Nunu, and Shaco. Like, Shaco...
Shaco's very unique.
Very unique jungler. I mean, I would almost put Shaco in the evergreen, but he's not really, like, a carry type jungler. You know, sort of just like, you go level 3, you get the gang.
He fights, like, unlike anything else. No, yeah. He?
Because, again, sort of like the Yasuo. Like, he's full squishy melee champ.
Yeah.
And you sort of waste your time. As AP Shaco, you waste time. And I guess you're an assassin. I think AD Shaco is probably more clearer style than AP Shaco. AP Shaco
is
more
AP Shaco is very unique. And so unique. Very neat. You got to kite so around. Strange. You got to think about your like box placement. You got to like use the alt clone really effectively.
The weird fringe champs for jungle. Other ones are like Nunu. The snowball mechanic. Very strange. Nothing in the other champ in the game sort of has that. I mean, I guess you could say like Sion, ult and that sort of stuff, but it's not the same. And Kled ult, you got it on your a normal ability, right? And consume, use one-shot camps.
Weird.
Doesn't really teach you how to clear camps properly. And then there goes Ivan, same thing. full support.
And to frame the question, imagine, and like, and the reason we view these as kind of, you know, I guess unique champions or weird champions is that imagine learning the game.
That's the problem. But yeah, that's champs, the problem. These you champs can play like them learning the game
later on in your journey. That's fine. But like, imagine like learning the game through like Cho'Gath mid. Like, what the fuck? Or, like, learning the game through Heimerdinger mid. You're screwed.
Hmm.
Like, you are screwed.
You're playing a different game.
You're playing a completely different game, you know? And I just... That's what. That's why it's worth having this conversation. Because that's what I get concerned about. It's like, you get... I get a player that's like... They just want to play... They're new to the game and they want to learn the game through Rumble mid. I'm like, you know, whatever. This is why we have approved champions. This is the number one reason. Right. You know what I mean?
Like, Nunu breaks... The gank fundamentals rules.
Imagine a client, Nathan, that is new to League, right? They get to level 30 and they want to play jungle and then they only have ever played Nunu.
Because the problem with Nunu is like, okay, I guess you can play AP. I think AP might be a little bit better than, like, I think full tank Nunu is one of the worst things you could ever do because you do negative damage. Yeah.
No, it's terrible.
And you can gank and you can just get free ganks off all the time because no champ in the game can gank like Nunu.
But it would warp your whole worldview, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I've had Nunu players join my program that were got to many of them for some reason get high elo. Like I've had Diamond 1 players, like multiple ones I can remember, and then they play another champ and they drop like bam, there's no elo range, they go down to literally like platinum. It was platinum 4, but right. Emerald 4 now.
So like 800
LP difference. It's ginormous.
And that's what you get. That is what you get when you main one of the champions, 100%.
I had other ones in here, like the AP junglers you've sort of popped up, like the Rumble, Morgana, Gwen, Mordekaiser. So these champs have been sort of in the jungle, in and out, super sort of meta, just weird fringe picks. But again, if you play these champs, your view of the role's weird.
Very strange, yeah.
Lilia I have in there as well, just because of the fact that she fights sort of like no other... It's not intuitive the way she fights, right? The in and out method. It's just...
Lilia's not as bad.
Yeah, it's not as bad. But it's definitely not, fit it's for the
like
jungle.
It's not like Nunu. Yeah. It definitely makes sense for the role, but it's unique. The way you fight, for sure. And look, the way we viewed... okay, we got to top, and then you got like, I guess, Singed, right? Teemo, Shen, like very unique kits that kind of play unlike any other... again, not to say that none of these champs are ineffective in solo queue. That's not what we're talking about. They're just unique. They're just strange and their kits don't really fit in an archetype and they play like unlike any other. So yeah, you got Singed and Teemo and Shen.
Shen's an interesting one because he's not technically a full tank.
I mean, you are.
You are, but you're also like AD.
Yeah.
Champ that whacks people down. And then that alt mechanic just changes.
The alt mechanic is just unlike anything. It's just incredibly weird ability.
So you might be thinking about global. So then why is Twisted Fate not a
Because the rest of the kit makes... I mean, again, mid laners can roam, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah, it just makes sense, right? That's just your roaming ability.
You're in the middle of the map. Makes sense to roam.
You have good wave clear.
Like Galio and Talia. There's heaps of them. But I will say with... TF, you think about the rest of the kit, it makes sense. Like, you've got this... Okay, well, okay, let's think about champion kit cohesion, right? Like, you think about TF, it makes sense because you've got this high wave clear, utility-based champion that can roam, which makes sense.
That's the archetype.
You've got wave clear,
right?
Non-commit, you've got range, you can one-shot waves, and you've got utility. So when you teleport someone, you stun someone. The thing with Shen is... I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. You have CC, so you got that. So you can ult in and then taunt someone. But it does. It's a bit weird to have that from a tank perspective. Like TPing on a tank that doesn't do that much damage. It's just unique, is what I'm saying. It kind of makes sense. It's just very unique because typically when you think of like a tank, they're kind of sitting in the front line playing front to back. But as a Shen, you kind of don't want to ARAM. Really, as a Shen, you kind of want to be in the side and utilize your ult, right? Because if you're in a team fight front to back, you don't use your R, right? That's the counter to Shen, that way I always say. You just team fight front to back. That's what traditionally over the years, as what we've always said into Shen, you just, when you see Shen, you just team fight because they can't team fight, which is weird for a tank. You want a team fight usually as a tank.
That's exactly right.
So it's like, he's
a tank, but he's not a tank.
It's like a tank that can't team fight. Like, what the hell is that? That is so weird.
It's same with Nunu. If you build tank Nunu, like, you can't really team fight. You have to go in with the snowball. If you can't, the play's done. It's like, what are you going to run around and like ease them?
Yeah,
like press an R. It's weird. These are weird champs.
And then for bot lane, what we did is we kind of put them together because I feel like support is a just versatile role. I think there's a lot that can be played in support. So like you can play anything from Lux support, Velcro support with ASAP. I mean, we had that conversation recently, through to pure utility, right? You can play literally basically anything. An 80 carry, you know, I wouldn't say majors are really off, are really unique, right? You can play Ziggs bot, you can play Casio bot, you can play anything.
Well, it's
right?
pretty much, it's pretty...
It's a solved role.
It's a solved role.
It's a solved role. Yeah. So you got to think of, I think the things that are a bit weird and bother the combinations, like the Cenotaph.
That's the most weird fringe.
Things like that. It's fringe combinations. Like back in the day, you had Yumi Mordekaiser and like just weird shit like that that just like doesn't... It's not intuitive and breaks the game. You can get these weird duos.
The Garen Yumi was famous.
Yeah, Garen Yumi. Remember we had Vlad. Remember back in the day, Vlad Yumi as well.
Yeah.
There was remember that weird meta when we were coaching Direwolves, the Vlad meta, the Mordekaiser meta, the Garen meta. You had, then there was the Tom Center, and that's always still around a thing. And like, there was even before that, like the whole, what do they call it? Like, there was a name for it where you would have. Fasting center, is that what it's called?
That's the problem. That's the problem with these, that the Cenotaph and the Cenotaph Cho'gath and stuff. Is that the Cho'gath gets the CS,
it's a bit
and
strange.
The Cenotaph doesn't.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's that stuff, which is maybe not so intuitive. That's whatever though. We'll have to get a bot lane expert for that one, which we plan on doing very soon. So now that we've kind of had that conversation, I want to ask the question. We're going to get into the real champ pool stuff. So how does this all impact champion pools? Why the hell did we just spend half an hour talking about that, right? So, the reason I wanted to talk about this is that, you know, when I get asked this question, Curtis, what should I play? What should I play? You know, I feel like it's my responsibility to recommend champions that fundamentally teach the role in an effective manner.
As a teacher, as a coach. As a coach. That's just what your brain
That's what my brain does.
Because especially, let's say, if someone we don't know, because we have a lot of people come into, new people come into our programs, all the comments and stuff. We don't really know you or what your league journey is that much. So our default is going to be, how can we give someone a champion that's going to have, that we know has worked, we've seen results, has consistent over a long period of time. If anything, we're going to be biased.
We're going to be biased.
With what we say from a teacher's coach perspective.
We want, what we're trying to do is we're going to give you a champion that gets results in solo queue, but teaches the role in an effective manner, right? Would you agree?
Yes.
Right. So that's why I tend to recommend it, like I recommend things like Ahri a lot, Talia a lot, Syndra a lot. Champs that like teach, or even if it's an assassin, they're mages, but if it's an assassin, I'd recommend a lot of time Akali, right? Play Akali. It's just a very good assassin. You can't go wrong with Akali if you want to learn an assassin. But you will very rarely, never hear me recommend Fizz. Never. You'll never hear me recommend, like, I mean, just going back to this list, like, why not play Yasuo? You know, why not play Heimerdinger? It just won't happen. You're right, because these are just fringe picks. They won't teach the role in an effective way. But then the question becomes, what if I like them? What if I find them fun? Right? And this is where it's personal, right? This is where it's personal. You have to understand that there are consequences for playing champions that you find fun. That's okay, though, as long as you're willing to accept those consequences, right? And so you got to view it three ways. So this is the three lenses again. In your mind, you got to balance these however you like. A, how fun do I find the champion? How satisfying, how fun, whatever. The second one, you know, am I willing, or does this champion teach me the role or the skills that I want to learn in an effective way? Or does this even matter to me? And then I would say number three is...
Meta resilience?
Yeah, how effective are they just in the game to get results in this ELO bracket, period. That's it. You got to balance that. You might be, if you love a champion so much, but it's terrible in your ELO bracket, that's on you. You have to be willing to accept that. Are you going to slam your... Are you willing to have a 45% win rate over 200 games? I don't know. I haven't really met anyone yet that is willing to accept that. I've had so many people...
That think they could.
That think they could, but they don't. I had someone that in my MLS... I've had two people in my MLS that play 200 games away.
Yeah.
I said, you're not going to get results. Mm. They do it and they come back 200 games later. I look at their OB. I'm like, all right, well... Told you. I hate to say it.
Do you ask? Are you still having fun? And usually they say, that's why they come to you, right?
Yeah.
Breaking point.
The breaking point. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, these are the champ pool questions come into play.
So you got it. So fun is the priority, but you also have to understand that certain champions teach the role in a particular way.
Yeah, it is. It's a juggling balance.
It's a juggling act.
Which is why this question's asked and people lose their mind over champ pools so much because
And you'll get a different answer from so many different people.
Yeah, exactly right.
So to answer, another question here, like, you know, what does a balanced champ pool, okay, we'll start this, what do you think of when you hear, you know, if someone says, Nathan, I want a balanced champ pool, what does that mean to you? And does it even matter?
So it's not about what it means to me, about what it means to them more so. I'm thinking when people are asking that question. So a balanced champ pool to the community, this is what I sort of think, the different factors, categories. It's a simple versus hard champions. Category number one. Category number two, we've got different archetypes. Assassin, I've got a tank here. Should I have multiple different archetypes in it? Because obviously certain archetypes are better into certain things. There's counter picks and all sorts of stuff. That's the way League works because there's 160, 70 champs right now, right? So, and then the last one is then the AD versus AP, right? Do I have the balance between AD and AP? So you've got to balance, again, the juggling act.
But should you even balance?
Yes.
This is the thing.
So what do you want to start with?
So I want to start with, you said the first one was complexity, didn't you?
Yeah.
Easy and hard champions. So let's talk about this for a second, okay? Start with complexity. In lower ELO brackets, in, let's say, silver and gold, you know, you really want to stray below. Let's say platinum below. You really want to stray away from any most complicated champions in general. Now, there are some in the upper limit of my MLS program, like the Orianna and the Syndra, which you can, but that's like the upper limit. Like, I wouldn't go above that. There are more complicated mids like Azira, Huey, you know, LeBlanc, things like that, Carly. These are quite complicated champions. I wouldn't recommend that. So ideally, like, there's a limit to the complexity that you should be willing to accept.
Yes.
Now, above Platinum, specifically I'll say above Platinum 2, is where you can consider one complex champion. Now, my opinion changes around Diamond 2 plus. You can have
multiple hard champs.
Two
hard champs.
Two complicated champions. No more. Now, there is a caveat to that. The caveat is, let's say you've played one of these complex champions for ages. We're talking, you've been a Yone. Let's say you've been a Akali main for 3 years, 2 years. You're so good at Akali that it's borderline not even a complicated champion for you. You could theoretically have a third complex, but that's like a unique case. Most people, yeah. Two complex champions, let's say Huey and Akali, like, you're not having a Yone in there. You're not having another complex. It's just too much. So ideally, you know, at the higher echelons of rank, like Diamond 2 Plus, you only ever want to have two complicated champions, and then your third, fourth champ would be more simpler champions. That's my framework in terms of complexity.
Yep, I like it. I think I agree. I have nothing more to add to that one.
Okay, so that's complexity out of the way. The second one you said was...
different archetypes.
Archetypes. So now, this one's tricky.
Should I have a mage and an assassin?
Yes, exactly. Or in your case for jungle, should I be able to play like a bruiser and an AP champion and a tank and, you know, whatever, supporter champ, utility champ? Also, I'll go through the jungle perspective first then. What do you say to that?
I say to it, okay, well, let's say in a real practical sense, if you were to learn, let's say, an assassin, like, let's say, Blue Cane.
Yep.
And then you want to... if you were to learn Evelynn as well, and you're both assassin, it's actually going to be quicker to learn that, yes. You know?
Agreed.
And you're sort of ticking some boxes of the versatility. Now you have an AP assassin and an AD assassin, yes. Right? So this is the sort of juggling act. But at the end of the day, you're an assassin. So you are going to have the hard games where you've got many tanks and you're going to be, you've got the tank support and then the tank.
But that is, would you agree that is the most effective way to climb? Like to yes. have, it's the best, right?
It is the best.
So you want to specialize in an archetype,
yeah.
Ideally.
Yeah.
Like ideally, you specialize in an archetype. So like, you're spot on. So for, say for a mid laner that loves assassins, I would say, okay, do a joy pool of Akali and Talon. Akali's Zed. Right? I wouldn't recommend for a platinum player playing Zed and Orianna. It's just not going to work. There's very few people.
I guess then there's a bit archetypes that are a bit more similar. So like, let's say if you're you know, you're a jungler here, and you've got the Bruiser and...
Yeah, Bruiser and Kane. What about Blue Kane and then, like, Lee Sin? Like, Blue... Like, you've got, like, Xin Zhao and
Yeah,
Kane.
Like, Assassin plus Bruiser. Someone that just can kill shit is sort of fine. But if you play... let's say you go from Kane to Talia, you're going to probably have a bit of a struggle journey, right?
That's what I mean.
Even tanks as well. If tanks, you go to say Zac, different. It's just not going to click
you. You go to carry. Imagine you're at Evelynn hardcore carry or Kindred hardcore, and then you're playing Rammus. It's like...
But if you go from Rammus or Zac even, or Udyr, to like Vi and stuff, I've seen it a lot, that's fine.
Yeah, so yeah, it's exact same in mid. You don't want to play Akali and then... Orianna, right?
The mage assassin.
That's like why you're on the other fucking spectrum. Yeah. But you could play Akali and Ahri. You know, you could play maybe Zed and Vex. You know what I mean? Like, so like you're not super far. They're different, but they're not on the other side of the universe, is what I'm saying.
Now that I think about it, and I think about my journey, one like solid archetype that actually differentiates a lot of people was, can you play melee champs as range champs in League of Legends? I guess this is more specific for jungle because there is the both, like the Kindred, the Graves, and the Talia, the Brand. Because for me, Curtis, melee champs is how I've played League.
Right.
I would really struggle with the idea of playing a range champion because I haven't got the muscle memory of a range champion.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I would tend to agree.
So when I think about a Zac player, they have Zac and Vi in their pool. They're both melee champs.
Nidalee, that would be so
versus
hard.
Kindred Nidalee, that whole spacing and stuff. Yeah,
it's a mindset.
Because you haven't built the muscle memory.
Totally.
And a ranged person will struggle with the melee because they don't know when to go.
But
I never really
view it in terms of range versus melee because usually that is inbuilt within the archetype itself, right? Assassins are usually...
Yeah, but that's again where the difference of jungles coming
right, in. Right, right, right.
Because there's so much.
Because you don't get a melee mage.
No.
You know?
But in range. Jungle, you can play Lilia as a melee
right,
mage.
I see what you mean. You know? Yeah, yeah. For jungle, maybe that is the case. Right.
Like if you go from Udyr, which is like technically an AP tank, and you play Lilia, you're actually probably going to have, you'll be fine, even though you're building full mage.
So what we can agree upon with this, you know, the second element of the champ pool is that you want to ideally have a combination of ticking differing boxes, but within a certain degree of, you don't want to stray too far away from like the categories is what we're saying. So like, again, to give an example, we'll just do one example, clean example from mid and jungle. There's a very big difference between playing Zed and Orianna, which are on opposite ends of the spectrum, versus playing maybe Orianna and Ahri. Right, so Orianna and Ahri would complement each other. You got champ, champ that has mobility, good into multi-threat, and then you got like kind of something that's more of a lane bully. So they're ticking different boxes, but they're still in the realm of like
sort of a mage-y, sort of like a mage-y, right? Yeah.
But then, for jungle, what would that be?
Jungle would be like playing tanks to bruisers. They're sort of connected. Like you can't like kill people. Mm-hmm. You're not going to insta die,
right?
But it's in the middle ground.
Versus like playing Rammus, then going to Nidalee. Like having Rammus, Nidalee in a pool just would not make sense. So I will say a part of like a challenger player's journey, and this is what, you know, this is part of the Master Plus journey, I do think is expanding.
Yes.
Like you need to be able, like to be a really, really good League of Legends player long run, you do need to be able to play multiple styles. Like I leveled up when I was a mage player, and then when I eventually learned Zed and Fizz and all these champions, I became a trillion times better as a player. But that's long term. Like I didn't start like that. I specialized in mages. I was a mage player. I played my Orianna, my Cassio, my Xerath, they were my babies. And I learned the game. You want to go down a rabbit hole first with an archetype. And then later on, once you've gotten to a pretty decent level, let's say Emerald or Diamond, then you might want to expand.
Yep.
Usually.
Yeah, for my journey, it would be I started playing the game tanks, my tank Udyr. Yeah. I learned the game from tanks. Then I went to Bruisers,
yeah.
And then I went to full assassin. Like I learned like the Diana. I made my Diana guide, Evelynn, stuff like that. Like I got pretty good at Evelynn. That was my journey. And it's pretty seamless, sort of the way it works. But I mean, I've actually never taken that step to ranged.
Right.
I've really been in my box, and I think I would level up massively.
You'd be a way better player for sure. So that's the second level. And then the third level, there was a third level here. So we did the first one was, what was the first
one? The first one was simple versus hard champs.
Yep, complexity, simple versus complexity.
Then the different type of archetypes. Yep. And the last one's AD and AP.
Yeah, AD, AP. Okay. Well, from Elena's perspective, it's just not important to have... But you can have a full AD. You don't need an AD champion in your pool, right? That's just a fact, straight up. You do not need an AD champion in your pool. It's nice to have one master plus.
This is from mid lane perspective.
From mid lane, it's yeah. nice. It's not essential by any. You can the amount of games that you're going to need an AD, just dodge is if it's that desperate. So there's that. Now we'll say there are certain metas that you will go through where it will be worse than others, especially when it's like a Lilia meta or some shit or whatever. But over the course of your journey, it's not big of a deal. The second thing is if you only have AD champs in your pool, it's also fine. And the reason being is that having a full AD comp's actually not that bad because the armor pen items in general are good. Like Cerildas and stuff are just good items.
Yeah.
So you're going to be fine. So having full AD is fine. Having full AP in a comp is not fine, but you dodge that game.
Yeah. I have the... Yep, so I'm just trying to think about what you said, but I'm just going to say it for jungle.
Yeah.
Having a full AD champ pool, completely fine. I've had that for many years when I've been Challenger, right? Yep. Literally my Rek'Sai, Jarvan's in Zhao, Volibear, sort of AP, but I built him tank. I played him sort of as more of an AD. I've never really needed an AP champ. But if you're an AP archetype type, again, you'll struggle with those. Struggling. Because again, think about it. The moment...
Especially in the jungle role.
There's so much more variability for the jungle role if you're AP because... Your mid laner is most of the time going to pick an AP.
Not a lot of mid laners even play AD mids in general.
Yeah. And then the moment a support player picks an AP, now you've got triple AP, and that now that's a hard game.
It's hard, yeah.
Right?
Because having too much AP is a problem. Yeah. Not having too much AD. Yeah.
And in general, AD, there's just more AD champions in the jungle in general that play.
That's correct.
Right?
And more AP champions in mid.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Exactly.
So it's interesting how they complement each other that way, right?
Just yeah.
The way that the game works.
Well, good game design.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah, and so yeah, you got to find the balance between all of that, right? And that's personal preference. But then again, and then the fourth layer is and then fun, right? You don't want to hate your champion, right? You cannot hate your champion, but you don't need to love your champion.
Mm.
You just need to like be okay.
Mm.
You know, it's just like do I love the champ? No. Do I like him? Yeah, all right. As long as it's then you're fine.
Because I always view the game as two different parts. Like, this is my champion, this is my tool, how I win League of Legends games. I'm playing the champion, but I'm also playing the game. I think people too much tunnel on about fun with the champion, and they're forgetting about the fun of the overall game.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, there's two factors. So, like the champion, I love League. Awesome.
Cool.
Love the champion, hate the game, probably not going to have a good time, right? No. Like the champion,
Hate the champion, love the game.
Hate the champion, love the game. Again, probably not really going to be a good mix. Yeah. It's just going to be like,
it's going to be average.
Yeah, it's going to be like.
The way I view it is like, imagine for breakfast, you know, you don't want to have a meal that you hate. Let's say you hate cereal, but like toast is like,
this is a good analogy.
But you would love having bacon and eggs on toast.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it'd be great to have bacon and eggs on toast.
Yeah.
But it might not make sense for my situation. So I'll just go with toast.
But even then as well, it's like, I guess this is a good analogy for shampoo as well. Sometimes you get sick of eggs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you actually would love cereal. And sometimes you get sick of cereal.
Yeah. Sometimes you do want to play a champion that is really simple, even though you didn't really want to do that. And it's refreshing.
Yeah.
I've had that with people say, I just want to fucking play a champ that has simple reference points. I don't want to have to think about my champion. I just want to play the game of League of Legends. And they do that, and then they might move on. You don't have to stick with it. And that's hence the champion cycling, which we'll cover in a second. But I do like that. I think you raise a really good point here. It's not like, I think this is the way people view it. And I'm going to say from my experience, because I when I played Dota, right, I had this mindset where I'm like, this is it. I'm going to pick a champion.
This is my journey. I'm all in.
This is my identity. Yeah. I am an Invoker player. I am Invoker real life. This is it.
Yes.
But the reality is that that's not the way it's going to work. You're going to
zoom out and say,
I'm a League of Legends player.
And the champions are my tools.
Because we want to have this really sexy, convenient journey. We think we're going to
It's just not that simple.
We're just going to play a champion. Yeah. We're going to play it to challenger, and then that's it. No. Not only are you going to get bored of a champion or sick of a champion and burnt out with a champion, your fundamental view of the game will change. Like, I loved Okay, so like again, the player I am in now is completely. I don't even like the game for the same reasons anymore.
That's right.
Yep. Right, straight up.
The way that I started playing the game, me as a full tank, hyper efficient farming jungler,
you would hate that now.
Yeah, that's not my view of jungle at all. And then you, full poke type mage, that's not how you play the game
I love anymore. Playing champions that get pressure and prior and impact the game, but I was the opposite before. I used to that's get shoved too. In, it's I'll scale all, yeah. and be like, whatever.
Yeah.
Pick me Xerath.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's so funny how that's exactly how our journeys are both
so
evolved.
You just change. It will always change.
Yes.
It will always in flux. So what you think today or this month will be very different 3 months from now. I promise you that. So just be humble, just be open-minded,
yep.
and just go with the flow. Be okay with just shifting around your champ pool, because we change as people. And then let's just talk about quickly champ pool size.
Yes.
I think we've covered this before in the Season 14 Rank Guide, but really quickly, the way I view it is one or two champs below Platinum. Again, to personality types, ideally one, and then you just champ pool cycle. But you can have two, but they have to be two simple champions. You can't have two complex. It's just too much. Mm. Platinum to say Emerald, two still, I would say. Emerald, low Emerald, two. High Emerald, you can have three if you want.
Three
still,
simple champs?
No, yeah, one complex, two.
Okay.
Two simple, ideally. You can have two complicated champs, but then in that case, you might as well do a duo pool, in my opinion. And then you can have three champions then in Emerald, if you wanted. But then Diamond 4 plus, you can have three champs again, two complex, one simple. And then D2 plus, same thing. And then Master, that's where I think you can have like four. You know, you want to have like maybe two complex and then like two simple.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
And so reiterate, this is your only four champs you're ever playing. This is where now champ pool
size. Just size alone. Yep.
What you're focusing on in that time. I mean, I always think, again, I haven't thought too much about this because you built a lot of muscle memory, Master, Tier Plus and stuff like that. But for below Master, below Diamond 4, you should always be at least be focusing on one specifically. Yeah. It's like, okay.
Most of your LP is going to come from one champion.
That's right. Yeah. If you look at anyone's, remember we did the...
with the OPGG.
The OPGG of the career. All the players that went over to Korea and, you know, they invested money in Korea and, you know, they're serious about climbing. We looked at all the OPGGs, even the people with, a lot of them were just flat out just one trick in, but even the people with pools, they were still focused on, they had majority of the games on one, maybe two champions. They didn't have an equal 33% split across all three.
If you have a champ pool of four, you're going to have the majority of your LP coming from your one or two top two champs.
Like 60-70% would be the ratio.
Yep, for your top two champs. And then the others would be very
picks,
minimal.
Niche picks, counter picks, stuff like that. Right. Yeah.
You're going to specialize. You always have to specialize in one or two champions at all stages of your journey. That's right.
All right. Champion pool cycling. What is champion pool cycling? So let's go over a case study.
Okay, so I wrote down some case studies. I just did two quick case studies.
We did three
quick case studies that just really exemplify, I think, classic examples, right? So the first one here, we've got an Emerald 2 player who plays Talia, Syndra, Tristana. I love this pool. I think just from a pool perspective, it's got a good mixture of complexity and simplicity. It's got a bit of ADAP. It's nice. It's just a nice pool, right? So let's say this player in Emerald 2 plays this pool for 4 weeks. But I'm just going to assume they got a background in these champions for the sake of this case study. Let's say they've played specifically, let's say, Talia Syndra for a long time. They got a lot of mastery with those two champions, right? So let's say 4 weeks later, they swap out Talia for Ahri. So now what they've got is they've got Ahri, Syndra, and Tristana. So two of those champs are the same. Now one of them is just different. So now with Ahri, Syndra, Tristana, they might do that for 3 weeks. And now they might be like, you know what? I'm going to swap out Syndra for Aesol. Right, not swapping out Ahri, swapping out Syndra this time. So now what we've got is we've got Aesol, Ahri, Tristana. And now what we do for 3 or 4 weeks, and then we swap Ahri back out for Talia.
Bringing back some old
champs. Old champs, exactly. So notice what we've done is there's a lot of little tricks in here, trying to trick people, right?
Yeah.
So the first one I've swapped out Syndra for Aesol. The first one, Talia for Ahri. The reason I did Ahri is because Ahri is still in that archetype of a mage, isn't it? Right? Still one of those mid-range mages. It's not too much of a shock to the pool. It still makes sense in the grand scheme of the pool. It's similar complexity. Makes sense. But then 3 weeks later, we swap out Syndra for Aesol. Again, similar oriented, like scaling, you know, relatively immobile control mages. Again, the skill set that you would have developed with Syndra would have also been similar to Aesol anyway, right? So it's not like a huge shock, right? So now we've got Aesol, Ahri, and Tristana. But then I swap one more time. But then you think, you can't swap. You can't. You've got mastery in 3 weeks. But the last swap was to a champ that you'd already had in your pool that you already have mastery on. So you might get sick of Ahri. I want to go back to my OG Talia. And then we have Talia, Aesol, and Tristana. That is a great example of where you're cycling, but you're factoring in the type of champ you're cycling in. You're also thinking about, do they make sense in your pool? And then, you know, similarity to the champ that you've also cycled. And on top of that, when you do cycle in the last time, you're cycling back in a champion that you've played in the past. So you're not just, you know, moving to a new champ every 3 weeks. You're thinking about, like, have I played that champion before? Because that's very different. If you have Mastery on Talia, you can bring it back in and out.
If you're learning a champ from scratch,
3 weeks is not enough.
Maybe, you know, you're, even though your pool, let's say, for example, that person was learning Ahri when moved to that Ahri Syndra Tristana pool. Mm. But we're learning Ahri. So maybe you actually stay on that pool, but you're mainly focusing on Ahri for 3 months.
Yeah.
But it's technically still Ahri. So you play Syndra Tristana here and there, but because you needed to, you can't actually, you don't actually want to swap
out. You don't
want to
swap out, you're not swapping out a new champ ever. If you're learning a champ, you've never played them before, they need to be in your pool at minimum for like, at least, we're talking 100 games or something, you know, between 70 to 100 games, right?
Yep.
Somewhere in there, depending how long that takes for you. So that's case study number one. Case study number two is a little bit more simple. You're a two trick, right? You play Akali and Zed. You do that for 8 weeks or quite a long time. And then you swap out Zed for Talon. And you might do that for another 8 weeks. And then you might swap out Akali for another assassin. So notice the time change, right? Because these are more complicated. You know, assassins require more time. You know, these are two complex oriented champions that require a sophisticated understanding of your limits, and you're also again swapping it out for a similar oriented champion.
So this looks like a player who's an assassin expert.
That's right, assassin expert.
They want to be in their journey in league is just pure assassin. They love assassins. Yep.
And then case study three, you've got a silver MLS client. They've played Echo, been an OTP for 70 games, and like, you know what, I'm done with Echo. So then they swap and they play 70 games of Swain, and they play 70 games of Swain. And then they swap out to Veigar and play another 70 games. This would be the L class. This is what I would prefer with my MLS clients, actually, is that they just cycle through. They 70, 80 games, move, 70, 80 games, move, and they just go through one at a time.
And that's because these are, you know, newer players to the game, newer to their rank journey. They're building different perspectives of the game, even regardless
of results. They're simpler champions. They also have clear reference points. And on top of that, when you're OTPing, right? When you're OTPing, you get sick of a champ. Fact.
Yep.
You don't want to OTP a champion for too long. If you play more than 70, 80 games with a champion, OTP, I would say 95% of people will lose their mind.
Yeah. One tricks guys are a very unique type of person, player, to enjoy the game only playing one champion.
OTPs, the way you want to view OTPs, everyone listening, is that if you're an OTP, you are an outlier.
Yes.
You are a very unique individual. 90, again, I won't even say more, 98%, 99% actually, should people will not be a OTP. They should not be an OTP because they don't actually want to be an OTP.
Would you define an a one-trick pony, someone who's plays like a champion for a year, or are you talking about multiple years, multiple seasons?
No, it could be for a year.
You would call that person a one OTP? Still an OTP. If they switch champion each year?
If you're playing a champion for more than 100 games only, and only that champion,
you're an OTP. I think that's a good definition. I've never thought of that, but I would agree. Yes. 100 games is a lot of games.
It's a lot of games.
It's a shitload of games.
It's a lot of games, and yeah. So OTPs are an outlier, and I don't recommend being an OTP to anyone. I think it's not a good, wise decision in general.
Just the way League is, you know, patches change. It's like, you know, Jono. Jono loved League because of how fast it moves, adaption. That's why he loved the skills, you know, that he was working on at the time about adaption, and especially nowadays, the world's changing so much. That is League.
Mm.
I think that's a very important baseline that, you know, you can't go in, as you said, to your identity is this champion. Like, unfortunately, that's not League of Legends. You can do that in MMOs because that, you know, your character really is, you know, you're like the I don't know, I think about you're a warlock in League of Legends. You know, there's if I was to do the ratio in WoW, it would probably be, I think a lot of people do like to play out the classes, especially the higher you get, but I think it would probably be 60% of people would be sticking to their one class for years, for ages, right? Just a different game.
And I will say, though, for League, one of the big reasons you want a champ pool cycle is that the game rewards you for seeing the game through other perspectives. You will that be a better well, yes. player, and you'll be better at the champion that you OTP. That's the mindfuck, right? This is the tough pill to swallow, is this. You play 100 games at Echo, and then, let's say for whatever reason, you decide to play 50 games straight of like, Veigar. You would be better at Echo, right? Than you would have if you continue to play those 50 games on Echo. So if you played 150 games total of Echo instead of the last 50 games with Veigar, you would actually be worse.
Yeah,
that's the tough pill to swallow. Because you would see the game through a different light, and you would have a different perspective, and that would make you better at Echo, which is weird. Which is such a weird thing, but that's what I 100%. That's what I've seen. That's what I've done, and that's what I believe. So. And that's it's really weird.
I'm just trying to think, does that exist in other like sports?
I have no doubt it exists in every other. Yeah,
like let's say I'm just trying to think about out in a sport that I probably know the most about positions, like AFL, fullback, and full forward.
You played hockey for ages, didn't you?
Yeah, I guess.
What about hockey?
So you got like right wing is sort of what I played, and then you have God. I can't even remember the other positions in terms of the is it defend back line? No, so I can't remember. They have weird names. Yeah, well, I mean, if you were to play, let's just say, just simple defense versus more offense, right? You if you learn how to play defense, you know what's annoying, right? If you're
exactly,
on offense,
you know what's
right?
annoying. So, like, I mean, thinking of like football, soccer. Mm. If you're a striker, and you know what the defense does that's annoying. I'm sure that would make you a better defender if you.
Yeah, but people don't switch roles in their careers, do they?
Yeah, I don't know how it works. Honestly, for
how
like,
does that work?
But I think when you're younger,
you learn everything.
You play
right?
a lot of different positions,
but then you specialize.
Potentially,
I think League would be the only one that you're. It's extreme. You're just switching champ. But you have the same main role. I guess the way you sort of view it is that if you're a defender, you know you're a mid laner, you know, or you're a jungler.
But this is the difference, though, right? With traditional sports, let's just take football, soccer, right? The game is the game.
That's right. Doesn't
right?
change,
you're still got so a striker and a defender still has the exact same skill set. Like feet, ball control. You're wearing the same shoes. Like everything's the same. But in League, it's a completely different skill set. You know, you're viewing the game through a completely different lens. You know what I mean? Like in football, you're on the same pitch, using the same ball. You've still got the same, you know, it's like, it's just the way you think is a little bit different. And like what the maybe patterns you're looking for are different. But
you have to know how to kick a ball.
Yeah, what I'm saying is the underlying skills that can be actually completely different in the game of League, yes. right? There are literally skills that you will never develop on certain champions
it's like
versus
engage
others.
In.
Like imagine having mobility in. Or a dash.
Yeah.
Like,
I think it's just simple. Just like so having the mindset to engage.
Right. Yeah. Versus
and
peel. It's so different.
Or
doing
you know,
damage versus
range.
Not doing damage.
Yeah. It's ginormously different.
It's a different game. Yeah. Totally.
Or even in support, like the role support itself, you can do both.
Being like being a Leona versus being a Lulu.
Same with jungle.
Yeah.
Top or
playing Rammus versus Nidalee. That's a different fucking game.
Yes.
Rammus versus Nidalee. That's a different game.
It's you laugh because it's just
so different.
Yeah. But you're the same role, right? It's crazy.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy.
I think that's just the beauty of League. There's just something for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so many, you know, we've gone through all the archetypes and even within a role, it's just crazy.
It is crazy.
All right. So back to champ pool cycling. So we've sort of already talked about why is it beneficial, you know, different view of the game, helps you understand the game more and helps you have more fun because one trick in can get painful for most people. When and how do you lose your mind on a champion? Sort of cover that. Negatives one trick, cover that. Negatives of champ pool cycling. Okay, negatives of champ pool cycling. Okay,
negatives.
So champ pool cycling, I wrote this here, is that this could be, people can use it as a excuse or defense mechanism. You know, it's like, I'm not getting results on this champ after like 10 games, bam. You know, like I want to keep switching because, you know, we have lots of people who, you know, say they want to improve, but really they just want to go through the honeymoon phase of every champion constantly.
I think you got to be careful here because I think there's only negatives of champ cycling if you're not doing it correctly. right? If you're doing it correctly, I don't really think there is a negative.
Because you would just call it, that's a different word.
It's a different word. It's not really, so if you're, if you're changing your champions and you've only got 20 games on them,
you're not champion cycling.
That's not really champion cycling. Yes. Champion cycling is when you actually have mastery, you've burnt out and you're moving on. Really, or you're feeling like you're at a plat. You're feeling like you've played a lot of it. You need to switch it up. You're a little bit burnt out. You're a bit frazzled with it. You need to move on. And that's after you've got a good sample size of games. We're talking 70 games. It's 80 games. That's a good sample size.
Fantastic
of games.
Fantastic samples. I think a 50 is a good sample.
Even size. 50. 50 to 70.
Yeah.
Ideal.
Yeah.
Right. But I honestly, I actually think, no, I would say 50 is too early. I think 60 is that magic really? Number.
Okay.
I've had many clients that say 60, that's when things really click. I think that 50, you're in that, still in that trough of like despair, right? Between games like 20 to game 60, you're in the shit, you're in the mud. I think 60 is when your head starts to poke out the other side, you know? So I guess maybe one of the negatives is that maybe you're actually... You set a rule. Okay, I'm champion cycling at game 70, but then you're rock and rolling at game 70. You might be clicking with a champion and things might be, you might be developing momentum and you're actually climbing. And then you're like, oh, no, Curtis and Nathan said champion cycle 70 games. I put it right. But no, you got to be, use common sense. If you're having fun with a champion, don't swap.
And you're climbing. Yeah, it's not black and white, right?
It's only when you stop really having fun and you're losing your mind.
Yeah. All right, now on to community questions around champion pool cycling specifically. First question here. How do you recognize skill regression without resulting? How to know when to cycle? So sort of like, how do you know when you're starting to burn out of a champion
right.
or regressing? It's like, okay, right. it's time to
How do you know when cycle? You should?
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes.
I mean, I'm going to answer it in the least professional way possible, which is essentially, you got to feel it. You got to be honest with yourself. And this is something that I can't believe how often I answer certain questions with this response. You got to be honest with yourself. You got to be, just listen to what is your...
Follow your gut. What is your gut instinct? You do.
Yeah. Just listen to yourself. Be like, how do I feel while playing the game with this champion?
Mm.
You know, you're at game 80. Are you having a blast? Or you feeling like you want to shoot your brains out?
You know, and the problem with like gut feeling, right, is like you might be saying like, oh, like come on, like you're better than this. Like, you know, I don't want this to be the case. But just listen to it, dude, and just do it.
Just do it.
You know? I've followed my gut for a lot of decisions, not just outside of league specifically as well. It's worked very well for me.
Yeah.
I think that, I don't know, you can't explain the gut feeling. I don't know if there's science around it. I think there is some science.
Look, I'm sure there is metrics thing that we say, okay, your win rate starts to taper
off, of course.
And your KDA starts to get worse and blah, 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 blah. But I just don't think that's relevant. I just don't resonate with the scientific or logical approach. I think you just got to be really, it's emotional. Like it is a little bit emotional. Yes. When you feel burnt out, it's a feeling, right? It's a feeling, right? You will know it. But you got to check in. And the only way to check in, by the way, is you got to do that end of week just reflection. On a Friday night or a Sunday afternoon or whatever they want to do, just sit there by yourself, 5 minutes, look over your OPGD and ask yourself, what's going on?
Yeah.
Just do that. You'll know.
Next question here, again about regression or burnout. How do you know when regression is due to stage 4 issues versus stage 2 and 3?
Good question.
Right. Mostly in regards to lack of intensity by digging too deeply into a groove with a champion, over playing and underlearning versus lacking knowledge of options and optimization.
Okay, I'm going to give another unprofessional answer. You know what? So this is the way I view it. Imagine, right? We're going to take a trip down to Lord of the Rings for a second. Okay. Right? Imagine with Frodo and Sam. And they're going on this massive adventure, right? And on their adventure to Mordor to drop the ring into Mount Doom, they overcome a lot of difficulties, adversity, and they probably did a lot of things very inefficiently, right? But they don't know until you've done it. So after that trip on their way back to the Shire, right, they would have had a lot of learnings, the things they did well, things they probably did pretty inefficiently, things they would maybe do differently if they had to do that again. So the next time they go on some sort of adventure, they're going to have a lot of learnings there, right? So the way I view it is that in your league journey, right, your journey to Mount Doom, I guess, to Challenger, it's there's a lot of trials and tribulations and painful experiences that you're going to have. I just view one of these little, like this whole thing of like maybe a champ pool cycle or whatever the hell it is and your whole experience about trying to identify stage four issues as it's like a miniature adventure. And you might do it wrong. You might have actually never, you might have actually had stage four issues, but you didn't know. Or you might, vice versa, you may never did and you thought you did. The way I view it is that make a decision. Let's say here for him, how do I know if I'm, if I should move or is it stage three, stage four? Go to another champion and see how you feel. You might be like, you know what? 50 games into this new champion, I've got the same problems. And you're like, oh, yeah, I guess it wasn't the champ. It was stage two, stage four. It wasn't about the new champion. Okay, that makes sense. And so, yeah, you might have pissed away 3 weeks. But there's only by pissing away 3 weeks are you going to know, in hindsight, what the problem really was. And sometimes you have to be inefficient. That's the reality of the league. It's such a complicated, messy journey. You are going to have to be a little bit inefficient and fuck around and find out and fail and cry until you know what actually went wrong. And I'll be honestly, just speaking from my own experience with my own solo queue journey, I view every painful experience and every, like, you know, drop of 500 LP or losing my mind with a champion. Like, this whole thing with Champ Pool Cycling came from me losing my mind with champions. It got created out of a problem that I only found out in hindsight. And welcome to League of Legends. So that's what I would say. Go with what your gut says. Even if it's wrong, doesn't matter. It's a win-win scenario. Either it works and you were right, spot on, or you just pissed away 50 games. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally so funny that that just came out of your mouth because it's exactly what my response was going to be. I mean, everyone on this podcast knows I'm the fuck around and find out guy. I love screwing up mess. It'll be so great if we had a logical thing. League's an emotional game.
Yeah.
The stage four issues is a lot of the time emotional thing.
Yep.
Even stage two and stage three, I mean, you could just not be getting into the details enough at all. You know, that could be a reason. And again, you're not going to know. How about, you know, you switch champion because you follow your gut. You thought it might be what your hypothesis was that. But the skill, honestly, the skill of reflecting, the skill of trying to problem solve your journey is the valuable thing in League of Legends, in my opinion. Results sort of aside, obviously results are a good indication of whether you've made good decisions or not. You can reconfirm your decisions.
There's just so much character building that is done on a league journey through all of your painful experiences, like wasting time with champions. You know, everyone's going to go through a period where they get tricked by a meta.
Yes.
Like, there's just so many pitfalls that you guys are going to fall into. And no matter what you hear us say here, you guys are going to fall for some bullshit. Right? That's just the reality.
Think about how many people exploded in the static shift when that popped up.
Oh.
That exploded everyone.
I mean, you could count so many. We could go through hundreds of different meta shifts that people got tricked by. You know, this is it. I've fallen for tricks. I've wasted time. It's, you just do it.
You know, I feel so bad for a lot of.
But I've also failed. There's been meta. I was late. I'm going to say specifically with Ahri.
Yeah.
Ahri, I'm like, oh, there's no way Ahri would stay the way it is. And it was strong for like 8 months. And I'm like, I'm an idiot. I should have just played it. And I messed up.
I feel really bad for my Jarvan players in my program.
You mean in the above or below?
Yeah, in my above Emerald players. Above Emerald. Soul 2 main program. Because I made that Jarvan guide at the end of last year.
Oh, I had the same experience.
Right? And Jarvan, because Jarvan, I mean, I guess I was playing Jarvan the whole time. I was late to make the guide because Gurren was just popping off.
Yeah.
And in meta and everything, Jarvan was like the best jungler in the game from July, August, you know, all the way till December, right? I made the guide in December. God. And then some people joined my program from watching that guide, right? And then I'm coaching them now and like, you know, they do a lot of good things, but it's way harder than it was to win games because of meta. So like, I feel really bad for them. Like, I have this one guy in particular. Like, I'm like, oh, every time he was a review, I'm like, awesome champ. I love him. He was my main for a long time. But, yeah, he's struggling.
I've made so many of those mistakes. Yeah. And I cringe thinking about it. Yeah. I'll tell you two funny stories. Three. The first one is I made the Cassio guide. I think it was the end of season 11, I would say. Or maybe it was the end of season 12. I made this Cassio guide. And it was like in December. And it was with Stoneplay, and I was like, it was great. I was killing it with Cassio. Cassio was great at the time. And then the meta shifted, and then it became mage meta. And all these mages, like Orianna and shit, came into play. Mm. And Cassio was just terrible. And all these people got super excited about Cassio. And they're on, they use the preseason to learn Cassio perfectly.
Oh, no.
And they come into the new season, yeah. And it's shocking, and no one's winning with it. I'm like, yeah, I stopped playing it, guys. I'm sorry. And like, just painful experience. Also, the worst one for me is Yone. I made this beautiful Yone guide. Mm. And that was when Yone was really good. And every single month that went by, Yone got worse and worse and worse and worse. And Yone, literally quote from AJ, who's the long-term Yone player, said, Yone is the worst he's ever been since release.
Wow.
Ever. He's literally the weakest he's ever been. And I made that guide, and I think so many people picked him up when he was actually strong, and it's only got worse worse.
It's
just
stocks.
You've brought out the peak, and it's just got worse. And I literally went from being my most recommended AD champion, by the way. I was recommending Yone to everyone.
Yeah, me too.
Buy now.
Buy stock.
Come in. The job, play Yone. Buy the Yone stock. And then it's literally gone to don't play Yone. If anyone asks me, and they say, should I play Yone? No. Literally, no. Do not play the champion. Think about that. Gone from recommend to everyone, recommend to no one.
Donate to the moon.
Yeah, and now it's just so many people pissed away so much time because of me.
So this is the reality of League of Legends.
Yeah.
This is just it. And this is going to be part of the champion cycling.
Yeah.
I was the same. I was saying Jarvan, buy Jarvan stocks, everyone. Yeah. Gurren's worked it out. I've worked it out. I'm challenging this.
Yeah.
Go. And then...
Yeah, it was good at the time, but just not, doesn't...
Because Riot can just obliterate. And the competitive meta comes in and just obliterates, you know, some certain champs. All right, next question here. When do you choose to start from scratch on a champion versus playing a prior main? Simply refreshing mastery.
Kind of what we're talking about before in that case study. It really depends, right? So if you've recently learnt a new champion, you're not going to learn a new champion again. Straight away, right? Like, let's say you've reintroduced a new champion, Ahri. You've never played Ahri before. And you play Ahri for 3 weeks. You're not going to go ahead and learn a new champion, cycle another one out, and you have no champs of mastery left in your pool, right? So what you want to do is if you wanted to cycle that other champ, it would have to be with a champ that you've played before. So you got to, again, this way, just use common sense. The mindset is that you don't want to be learning two champs at once, and you always have to have... at minimum, one champion in your pool that you have a lot of mastery with. That's the trick. Because this is, okay, a trap that you don't want to fall down, trust me, this is a bad one, is completely removing every champ from your pool. You basically never want to do that.
Yeah, never.
Because it's like you have no identity. You're a nothing. You've gone from being up here, you have this identity, you're stripping away your entire identity, and then you're left with nothing. Yeah.
So that would look like, again, you know, you have a champ pool of three at January, by July, none of those champs in your pool anymore. You're just floundering around.
You need to have always one champ in your pool that you have a lot of mastery with. Mm. That's just the rule of thumb. Mm. You just follow that. As long as you have one champion in your pool that has a shit ton of mastery, you're all good.
Yep. And that could look like, you could have those three champions, let's say in January, you know, of this year, and then you have only one of them, but then you've actually built that Charm Master over that whole season.
Right.
Then that,
you know, that becomes, I mean, your one. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Once you have enough experience and success with that.
Yeah, that's why it's timing. That's why we kind of use that case study. It's about timing.
If you're choosing to start from scratch, how do you decide what kind of champion to play? Like in some same style of champion or completely different style, which is better?
Again, depends, right? Because it depends. There are players out there that can play multiple styles. There are players that can't. Again, it depends on the person, I would say.
Mm.
More often than not, though, like we had that conversation before, you want to be having an identity within your player identity.
I think this is where it sort of comes, like, you know, below platinum and, like, you know,
rank matters a lot.
Like, I would love for someone, you know, in Emerald Platinum to be playing champions most of the time similar. But if you're like a veteran player, Diamond, even High Emerald, start from scratch on a new champ to refresh your view of the game. New style completely would be great.
Yep, agreed. Sometimes that's what you need.
Yeah, what you need to get to that next level.
Sometimes I tell people, I'm like, you just played in mobile majors forever. You just got to play something with mobility, dude.
Just want to know what it feels like.
You got to know what it feels like to have mobility.
When do you cycle back to your prior champion? I'm planning on doing 50 games of ex-champion without playing my other champion before rotating back. Is this sensible?
It's kind of what we were saying before. It's the same question, right?
Once you have done some past champ pool cycling, how do you decide what to play? Does this choice start to affect your learning journey? / how do you avoid trying to ditch hard games on one champ by playing the other? Does this matter?
So what's the, I don't really...
Once you've done some past champ pool, so you've done some cycling before, how do you decide, okay, what to be in your pool?
Right, as in like, I think his question is, do you ever stop champ pool cycling?
Ah, I see.
I'm assuming.
Yep.
I mean, that's the way I'm interpreting
this
question.
Yep, let's answer it in that perspective. Does this choice start?
I mean, I think, again, it really... Okay, so like, you might find that a particular trio or duo of champions you just love. You might want to play a duo pool for a whole year. You might just fall in love with a Carly Zed, and I want to play a Carly Zed to the moon, and I'm going to do it all year, no matter what. I'm having fun. I'm not burnt out. I feel great. There are other people that might want to cycle through multiple times in that year. So I think that I don't want you to view champ pool cycling as like one thing that you do and then it's done and then you never do it again. It's something you always do. It's kind of like in the gym, what's that thing called? Like you do like a cycle of like, not like a cycle of steroids, like a cycle of like, it's called like progressive overload or whatever, where you like, incrementally you work your way up to your peak weight and then you start the cycle again. You like rest and then do the whole thing again with different weights. It's like that. So it's like you do a cycle of like 8 weeks or whatever it is, and then, or 12 weeks, I don't know, and then you like do it again. So like it's like something that you always do. I feel like champ cycling is something you always do in your journey. You don't just one and done, you know. So that's like the way I would answer that question.
Again, it's just the way metas change and strength of things. I think champ pool cycling, we all need to accept as a community, is part of being a good league player, climbing the rank ladder and having the best experience.
You know, champ pool cycling, actually, now that you mention it, it's probably one of the most... there's like no negatives. It's like, you know, it's actually one of the most pragmatic, helpful tips that is like... it's like broken by concept. As an actual concept, right? Like, think about it. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, a lot of like tips that we give, it's like, yeah, but situational this. It's just do it. You know, it's good for your relationship with the game. It's good for you. Bet you'll be a better player. Every aspect of the game. It's pretty crazy, isn't it?
It's good for your health.
Yeah, it's good for your health.
It's good for your health. Going for a walk every morning, getting some sun, brushing your teeth.
That's right.
Does the trade-off of learning multiple champions over time outweigh the potential loss of champ mastery you develop as an OTP?
Does the trade-off of learning multiple champions over time outweigh the potential loss of adaptability? Basically, well, you can answer this question more better than me, because you played a shit ton of Rek'Sai. Borderline, not OTP, but you like you're saying the adversity you went through with Rek'Sai, did that pay off? Because this is, I think you would be able to answer this question. Because you pushed through a lot with Rek'Sai, where maybe in hindsight you would have champ or cycled, but maybe that was good for you to push through.
I mean, the way that my journey getting back to Challenger over the last couple of years was Rek'Sai, but I was cycling through Jarvan Xin Zhao, and then Volibear was actually technically a big help in getting Challenger, that when I finished Challenger in 2022 season 12. And then last year was just flat out Rek'Sai. I mean, this is again where this whole sort of conversation about gut feeling. My gut feeling was to drop Rek'Sai hardcore at the time because I just wasn't feeling it. And then, I mean, actually, you know what? I mean, it was sort of as Rek'Sai sort of became stronger in the meta.
Right.
And that sort of just, and then bam, I just picked it up. Yeah. So, you know, and then sometimes, again, I think sometimes you can get a bit more, you know, lucky with timing. And that's why having, I guess, more champions with your champ pool, and if you're more experienced playing, you've cycled well, you know, you sort of have a good timing sometimes with the meta, and, you know, it will just actually just pay off, and then you actually be, you know. But yeah, like if Rek'Sai didn't get all those buffs and stuff like that, I probably would still be playing a lot more of that Jarvan Xin Zhao Volibear that I was.
So I just think that... I personally don't think there is a loss of like...
Yeah.
I think champ pool cycling is always going to benefit you.
It's like champ pool cycling is important. champion mastery, getting into the details, learning a champion, borderline OTPing is really important.
But there's a difference between... Okay, so let's just... I want to clarify something here. There's a difference between plateauing with a champion and getting into the details and breaking through that plateau versus being genuinely burnt out and not having fun anymore. You know what I mean? Like, that is different.
That is.
So that's what I think that...
So I guess in my case, what it was complete plateau.
Because if you're plateauing, you shouldn't champion cycle.
Mm.
You want to get into the details. You want to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. So I did. I did champion cycle.
Right. But if you're genuinely burnt out, now you can be burnt out and plateaued though. That's the where it gets a bit messy. Yeah. That's where you got to be honest with yourself and blah, 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 blah.
Maybe I was burnt out. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. And sometimes you don't know. Maybe it's like, all right, well, maybe I would, maybe again, it's one of those whole fuck around and find out. Maybe you were better off OTPing or breaking through that plateau point and you shouldn't have champion cycled, but how are we ever going to know? Right. So you don't know.
You don't.
It's hard. It's an hard one to answer. But I would just say, I don't think you can really go wrong with champion cycling. You're going to end up at a good rank regardless.
All right. Last question here is there a downside to having only simple champs in your pool? Non-mechanical champs?
No.
No.
There is this massive misconception that I cannot stand about you need to be able to play mechanically intensive champions to be a good player. That's just bullshit.
I always say there's so much depth of the simple champs as well. Like, if you get into the details, learning how to win games with simple champs is so... And again, this is sort of the differentiation between playing the champ and playing the game.
But people, you can make any champion... You can be mechanical on any champion.
You can.
Now, it may not be intuitive, but you can if you want to be. Okay, let's take Hassam, the Swain player, right? He's a very good mechanical player. He plays Swain. You wouldn't think of Swain as a champion where you can have mechanics max, but you obviously can. He shows it and he gets challenger with a champion that you and has very high mechanical expression. He's spacing with his how accurate he is with ease, the mind games he plays with ease, how accurate he is with his W's, spacing and tethering with his Q's, his ghost usage. There's so much you can do. Again, it's not as intuitive maybe as it would be if you were to play Orianna or something, but there is a lot of mechanical expression. So I want to delete that line of thought about I need to play complex champions to be good at the game. You can be amazing at the game with simple champions, and there's no downside.
But then on the opposite, having too many mechanical champs in your champ or hard champs is a problem.
That's correct.
You're going to struggle. So simple champs, A+.
Yes.
Tick of approval, as many as you
want. But I will say this, okay, and one little caveat. The caveat, though, is like there are extreme simple champions. Yeah. Like we're talking Malzahar.
This is where we go into...
Where it gets a little bit...
This is where we go into the weird champs. Some of these are weird champs, like... I mean, I think about Ivan Nunu, right?
Right, right.
Like, I would... An Ivan Nunu player, there's a pool.
You know
what I mean? So there is extreme case. What would that be for
and
me?
And you might be limited in what you can learn if you've only ever played Malzahar. You know,
I think that what I'm trying to say here is that there's not many hardcore simple champs.
Yeah,
in
game. There's not many.
So you shouldn't That's have to worry about that.
There's like barely any.
Yeah, for jungle, I can literally just think of like really Ivan.
I can only really think of Malzahar.
Just Malzahar,
maybe.
For support, obviously, it'll be Yuumi. I don't think AD Carry really has any top either.
No. Yeah, very very few. So yeah, I wouldn't even worry about that. There's no such thing as too simple.
Yeah. All right. I think that covers everything for today for champion pools, champ archetypes, champ pool cycling, which we've discovered is great for your health. Let us know what you think in the comments.
Yep.
Any other final comments here, Curtis, today to wrap up episode 195?
Another episode in the books.
We'll see you guys next week.